Hey, Sox fans. Hey, welcome back. It's Tuesday night. It's Hot Takes and Heaters. He's Danny Miller. I'm Nick Morawski. If you're joining us live on Twitch or on the Future Sox YouTube channel, which hopefully you are, you've subscribed, we've got a ball game going on here in the eighth inning. It's a one-run game. Sox hosting the Twins. Leisure on the mound. We're going to be talking a little bit about this game here as it wraps up. We've got a pretty good record if you've been following along on Tuesday nights with the White Sox. It was a rough one last week against this same team, but in Minneapolis, the Twin Cities. So if you're listening to this podcast after Tuesday night, down the road throughout the week, you know, bear with us here as we're kind of going live, but maybe you can relive some of this with us in real time. Danny, good to talk with you once again, buddy.
Yeah, man, it's it is once again Tuesday night, like you said, and once again we are joining our show and our chats right towards the end of a really good ball game here, and you know, I'm here for it, man. If we're not gonna get a lot of great baseball throughout the season, if they keep this Tuesday streak of playing some good baseball, man, I mean, what a great day to do it if we're gonna be on the air week after week. So.
Yeah,
man. Good to be back. Good to be sitting here talking with you, man. How's things in Nick Morawski's life these days?
Good, man. Can't complain. You know, kind of a it was a good weekend. You know, for the Sox, busy weekend for myself personally. My little boy, my son turned 2 years old, so we had some family gather. You know, we had a little party for him.
Happy birthday!
Yeah. He's a ball of energy, and so I added to that was just the excitement, the walk off. Andrew Benintendi, 6 RBIs on Saturday night, 2 home runs, a sweep, which is going to happen. The Sox are gonna get a few, you know, games in a row. They're not going to end up 25 wins or 30 wins. It's not going to happen like it was projected. But here we go. Those Twins, they don't quit, man. They just tie it. And ball gets away. Some sloppy baseball from the White Sox, which they dodged a bullet earlier in the game. It could have been a worse inning, but here we go. Tied 4-4. So here I'm complimenting the Sox, talking about the sweep. And Danny, we've got a tie ball game here.
Yeah, didn't expect to be doing this early in the show. We're about 2.5 minutes in here, so, and I'm already going for heater number one. Boy,
so we got James that just said, "Spark it up, Danny."
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, it was bound to happen. You know, the White Sox. I'll tell you what, man, they really know how to give up those late inning runs, don't they? And you know, the thing is. This bullpen is not as bad as a lot of people would say it is. It just doesn't look very polished right now. Has been some misuse of it, although it does look like it's maybe starting to piece itself together slightly better.
I don't want to call it a revolving door, but there's been, you know, just recently, since the last time we talked, Danny, there's been guys moving up and down and, you know, goodbye, David Garcia. I think Baroa came back up.
I mean,
you know, Brad Keller's around now. He might be sliding into the rotation. He was in relief on Monday night.
You could almost put like a 5 over-under on the number of players being moved around on a daily basis in this organization right now. I mean, it seems like they move like 5 guys every day.
Yeah.
Almost every day. You know what I mean? It's kind of wild. And, I get it.
I want to get your thoughts on some of those. Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's talk about it while we watch Jordan Leisure get the last out of the inning here.
Not so much as Jordan Leisure, just a hanging curveball that was ripped past Andrew Vaughn. Minnesota scores 5-4 Twins. It tends to be in that sweet spot when the Sox just can't figure it out. Last week, you know, Kopech was a little shaky. You know, Twins came from behind last week as we were talking. Byron Buxton, I think, was the hero, if I'm not mistaken, to at least tie it up. And then they ended up walking off the White Sox. And here we go. So I've liked Jordan Leisure. You know, I'm not saying that this outing right here is at all going to define what he's been doing. He's young. He's still terribly young. But I've liked his stuff. You know, it's just the way things are going for the White Sox.
You know, you would think, especially after this weekend, you would think maybe some of the luck, some of the chips would kind of fall in their favor. Anything would fall in their favor. And
you'd think, yeah.
You know, yeah. We did see a couple of those where you get those seeing eye pop-ups, those little slappers that kind of just get through. You know, they even talked about it on the broadcast the other night, actually it was Ozzie talked about it on the post-game show where, you know, you see these guys that go up there and they just hit the ball on the screws. But it's right at somebody, and it's a dead ass out. I mean, it's just there's no time, no nothing to react. The guy just got out in his glove, and it's over. And then you get those other moments where you barely get some wood on it, and you know Andrew Benintendi gets a little seeing eye pop up that drops in between three guys, and you know finds life for an inning to continue to put some runs on the board. So baseball is a crazy game, you know, and the White Sox don't seem to be getting the breaks go their way. There's been some bad umpiring, which we saw an article come out earlier this week about how, you know, I didn't get through the whole thing, unfortunately, but the White Sox have been on the receiving end of some bad calls more than most teams in baseball this year. So not only do they not have luck, they've just got a lot working against them, including a
Leisure is Jordan Leisure is all over the place. I believe a hits batsman here. Twins still in business. First and second, two outs. Control, just not Leisure's friend. You know, I feel like when you're scuffling, Danny, you know, if you're not going to have friendly calls from the umps, if you're going bad, I don't know if it's a, you know, you create your own destiny sort of thing, but you just feel like you're not going to, the calls aren't going to go your way. You know, like when a pitcher's struggling to find the zone, he doesn't get those close ones, right? But if you are on and you've been hitting your spots, you start to get a little leeway off the edges, if you know what I mean. Now, extrapolate that, you know, with some of the calls and how things have been going. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm making more excuses for this team that's necessary. But, you know, Trey put in the chat here, what was the point of signing Brebbia? And I feel like you could say that, in my opinion, about a lot of guys, especially, you know, arms. We just needed arms. You know, Getz was starting to just take a flyer on all these guys. And I think you would say it's pointless. Like really, why are we even messing around with Brad Keller at this point? And entertaining him to be in the rotation when I'd rather see other arms during a throwaway year like this.
Yeah, well, it's been talked about pretty much everywhere. You're looking at 1,500 or so innings in a season. You're going to blow through some pitchers. White Sox are not the only team to do this. Unfortunately, the only thing that the White Sox have not going in their favor in that department is they're bargain shopping for everything. And they're bargain shopping on guys that they feel like have shown some signs of life in the past. And maybe they can kind of, you know, bring some of that life back. Maybe Bannister feels like he can pull something out of these guys. So, you know, they loaded up on depth, which we've talked about ad nauseum. Thing is none of that depth is all that intriguing. And you're kind of just hoping that you hit on a couple of these guys. It wouldn't shock me if it's still going to continue to be a revolving door for months on end here, where the Sox are going to be bargain shopping for guys that have been sitting, that aren't playing for somebody, that are in other minor league organizations, that are, you know, veteran presences that maybe the Sox can feel like they can pull something out of them. And for fairly cheap, you know, I feel like this is going to be a theme this year. So I understand why they went out and went and got these guys, and they got a plethora of these guys. It's because they know they're not all going to hit. They're just trying to do what they can cheap on 1-year deals, because at the end of the day, next season, you're looking at, I mean, it's like $40 million or so left on the books, plus probably another 2021 in arbitration by the time it's all said and done. So you're looking at a $60, $61 million payroll next year, roughly, you know, and I'm just kind of spitballing that a little bit. If you can keep a handful of these guys that have shown some promise around, you bring up some of your young prospects that you're really hoping for next year, there's going to be a lot of money to throw around on, you know, handful of bullpen and rotation arms and maybe one or two position players. And this White Sox team, all of a sudden, I'm not saying they're going to compete for the Central, but they're going to be way more competitive than they have been right now. And I think that's really all we're trying to do is get through the 24 season and, you know, not be complete bums like they are right now. But unfortunately, they're going to have their struggles. Everybody and their brother's known it. So
we heard from Chris Getz at the beginning of the Rays series this past weekend, as most general managers talk before the start of a homestand. And in my mind, he finally started saying the things that he should have said way back in August or September about what this 2024 White Sox team was going to be like and the length of time it was going to take. By the way, Baroa is in the game. He had a pitch clock violation, walked a guy. We got bases loaded here. Sox still very much in trouble. So, you know, Getz comes and says, look,
Freelander is unhittable. Well, that's because he's not throwing anything in the strike zone, but we appreciate that comment, James.
Getz says, look, these things are going to take time. This is going to take time here. So you have to start looking at, what our farm system's like. He's got the cigar rate. Danny Miller is, he's definitely cementing the definition of heaters here. And we haven't even been at 20 minutes.
Well, I'm not lighting that one up yet. I'm just showing that one off for at the moment. If you haven't noticed, I am sitting here sipping on a coffee.
Oh, there you go.
And I went ahead and pulled out one of my hint of coffee flavored mac and noodles.
There you go.
For this evening to kind of set the tone for my coffee. But
can you drink coffee at all? You know, times of the day.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I can drink coffee.
And, me too. And go to sleep. Me too.
Yeah. Weird that how that happens. I was a big coffee drinker when I was in the Navy, and then I kind of stopped doing it after I got out of the Navy. And I don't know, probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I got real big into the coffee again. And it helps me wake up in the morning for sure, but it does not keep me from going to bed at night. So,
yeah, no, I'm the same way. I love it. Black coffee, dark roast, just about any time of the day. I'm good with it. So Sox got out of the inning there, left the bases loaded. So we go to the bottom of the eighth, trailing the Twins. But, you know, I'm talking about Getz, and, you know, he comes in front of the media and in fans, you know, for the most part, and just says, you know, we need time. This wasn't going to be an easy fix. But that's what Jerry said. We, of course, you know, people that have been paying attention, we knew Jerry was just blowing smoke and lying when he said he wanted Getz in because he didn't want to waste time. You know, he wanted this to, you know, start going right away. He just didn't want to be a long rebuild or anything like that. Getz refrained from talking about rebuild, and now we're talking about it. You know, which, again, if there was just transparency back in August and September, it a little bit – maybe for me, easier to stomach. This thing is never easy with the lack of winning over the last 120 plus years, and especially during Jerry's regime and what has happened since the last rebuild and how horrible that went. But just come out and say it. We're Sox fans. You know, we could stomach this. And I think maybe Getz was just trying to save some face, knew he shouldn't have been in that role to begin with. And I'm going to try to sweeten things by telling you it's going to be a quick fix. We knew it wasn't going to be. Obviously, this year's proved it. And now he has started to already say it. So when you look something like at a move, Danny, where, you know, Dom Fletcher is sent down, and he was a guy that the Sox, you know, acquired for, was it Christian Mania? What were your thoughts on that? Because you were high on Christian Mania. Dom Fletcher was supposed to be a guy that was going to be kind of plugged in on a regular basis, and now you get Sheets out there playing right field regularly.
Yeah, you bring up the hardest part of that to swallow is the fact that Christian Mania is playing for another team while Dominic Fletcher is not on the White Sox bench right now. That's the hardest thing to swallow. Now, you know, we talked about it where Christian Mania, maybe his velocity was something that the White Sox just weren't happy about it not coming along for a handful of years, kind of just plateaued. Then he goes to another organization and unlocks like another 2.5 miles an hour average on his fastball, and everybody goes, oh, WTF, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we got Dominic Fletcher, who's supposed to be a scrapper, supposed to be a great, you know, at least an on base kind of guy. He's not a huge hitter, although last year I think he hit like 300. You know, in limited time, he didn't play the full season last year, but
he was supposed to improve defense, and it was going to be, hey, we got a proven right fielder now, and we traded and you something. Were supposed that
to feel good about that.
I'm sorry, Sox fans were getting rid of pitching, young pitching. You know, when we're going to need pitching going down the road here, getting rid of it. I just felt like, oh, Fletcher is kind of the guy that they want, and I get it. He might come back up. I believe it was Andrew Benintendi.
It is Andrew Benintendi.
Ties the ball game up here in bottom of the eighth. Andrew Benintendi, I mean, he's the hottest White Sox player right now.
He's really loving that opponent's bullpen out there in right field lately. He has deposited a few, you know, and almost in the same place that he had to walk off the other night. So we're tied up.
I've got the volume down. I couldn't hear what Schriffen said if he gave it Southside stand-up.
I haven't muted myself.
Okay. So I couldn't – it seemed to be a no-doubter, but I definitely want to talk a little Schriffen at some point. Just, you know, it seems like it really riled up fans over the last few days.
Twitter was almost unbearable the last 2 days.
God. Wow, there's a lot of just – I mean, it's always toxic, and there's a lot of hate, and there's a lot of anger, and there's a lot of clenched fists, but – man, over the last few days, they went after Schriffen. Sox, man, Sox aren't going away. My man, Danny Mendick, already a home run in the game. Now a double. Danny Mendick and maybe Tommy Pham, and a little bit now recently of Benintendi, but not really. It's been more of Tommy Pham and Danny Mendick maybe have kind of rejuvenated this team.
No. It was none of them. It was calling up Rafael Ortega.
Oh, Rafael Ortega.
Rafael Ortega is the clubhouse guy that was the spark and the energy for this team. And I say that so tongue-in-cheek. Don't come at me. I'm totally busting balls here. You know, I think part of it might be Kevin Pillar's exit. Because if you – I don't know. Again, I hate to bring – I keep bringing this up, but the Foul Territory podcast has been – absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that Kevin Pillar stuff was great. Yeah.
And the interview they did with Pillar, literally, like, Pillar's like in the parking garage of his building, sitting in his dark car, getting ready to ship some stuff off back home to Arizona for himself and his family, pretty much right after he had been DFA'd. And they had an interview scheduled before they knew anybody was going to be DFA'd. And, I mean, he came out, he laid it all out there, and he was like, listen, man, yeah, of course I'm hurt. You know, I was brought in here, and he told everybody, you know, Pedro sat me down and Chris Getz sat me down and told me why I was here. And, you know, I've always been a good clubhouse guy everywhere, and everybody knew it, and they wanted him to fix some things. And he pretty much said, and, you know, after hearing Chuck the week before on Foul Territory, who also kind of let us all know that, you know, the suspicions about a bad clubhouse the year before were right. He called it fractured. You know, Pillar says, yeah, it was kind of bad, but the vibe started to change and guys started to believe in themselves. And that's really what it was. Is, you know, there was these cliques that all of a sudden were gone. The guys were hanging out together. They were starting to believe in themselves. They needed to believe that they could win every night. But we see these eighth inning blowups. And he said, those are the moments where one or two things, not going your way at the end of a game. And you could see the attitudes of some of these players kind of
now, what did he say?
They stop believing in themselves for a minute and they fall apart.
What did he say kind of on night and day between the Atlanta Braves and the Chicago White Sox?
That was a little something. You know, the Braves knew. The Braves knew who they were. They knew they had a lineup. They knew they had a team, and they were going to go out and they were going to, like Pedro was saying last year when he said, told everybody, we're going to come out and be prepared to kick your ass every night. The Braves were prepared to go out and kick your ass every night. The White Sox didn't quite believe it. And that's kind of what I was getting at, was when he said that, you know, as things started to come along and they started to, you know, get that energy going, it's nice to know that your clubhouse isn't as fractured as it was once before.
Yeah,
but if you can't believe in yourself late in the game when things maybe aren't exactly going right, like a team like the Braves knew that even if they fell behind late in the game, they had everything in them to come back and beat you. And this White Sox team still doesn't believe that.
Ian's got it here, and he put it up in the chat. They have talent, completely different situation, you know, and that's true. It's like Atlanta looks around and they see what kind of roster they have. They see, you know, who's in the clubhouse. They know the track record. They know how the team was built, how purposeful it was built, not just depth, but meaningful depth. And that is a different situation than, you know, players coming in with the Chicago White Sox. I think Tommy Pham even said it. It was kind of just a monetary thing for him, of course. You know, I wanted to make the money. It wasn't because there was going to be any future with the Chicago White Sox.
Speaking of Rafael Ortega.
There's your guy. Is he wearing number 74? Oh, no, 27.
27, oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Coming in to pinch hit the bottom of the eighth with a man on second and one out. Let's see what he can do here. But, you know.
Yeah, this would be a big run.
Yeah, it would be huge, huge. You know, Jordan Leisure obviously had a little bit of a blow up in the top of the eighth. And then, you know, obviously Baroa didn't exactly look great when he came in, but he did get out of the inning only after giving up a run between, I'm sorry, two runs between, no. Yeah, two runs between the two of them. We're tied up after the Benintendi home run. If we can get a run here, what do? You bringing in Michael? He only pitched one inning last night. Do we finally get to see Michael in back-to-back outings?
I would.
Last night was not a save opportunity because he pitched in the eighth.
I mean, to me, what I've seen from Michael Kopech is exactly what I expected to see from Michael Kopech. He's ramped it up.
No milkshake talk in this chat, Ian. Thank you.
He is ramped it up to, you know, triple digits, and he's relying on that fastball in those short stints. It's a sprint, not a marathon for him. But the lack of control, you know, like most times I don't think he knows where the ball is going. You know, I just don't think he trusts at all that it's going to find the zone. It's going to find a catcher's mitt. I mean, he just is so inconsistent. And I had a feeling that was going to stay the same. Like, that's how he was in sort of his starting roles. That's why he got bumped. That's what we're seeing out of relief. I mean, I'm glad he can throw flames, and yeah, that's scary. And he's got some nasty secondary stuff when he's throwing that high velocity, but there's no consistent control.
Well, and that's the thing. Clutch says in the chat here that, you know, he only has one pitch. In a lot of occasions, I guess that's true. When the heater's working, the heater's working, and maybe he doesn't have any secondary stuff going on. When he's got the secondary stuff going on, he doesn't have the heater working. It's like he can't get everything together. But we have seen some nights where, I mean, it was just a few days ago where we saw him come in and just use that slider as his primary pitch for the inning that he went through. And it was fantastic. Now, if he can find that consistency that you've been talking about, we might have a weapon on our hands if the Sox are so inclined to keep him or, you know, trade away to a contender, which, you know, I'm neither here nor there about, you know, if we can get value out of him one way or another, it would be absolutely fantastic. But
who you're going to get value from, Danny, you're going to get value from Fetty. I mean, he looked outstanding. Was it on Sunday? Almost threw a complete game. His last two innings, he's been lights out. I think that was a guy that, you know, I had a feeling he was going to try to prove something. You've got what, another year of control on him?
Yeah, I mean, literally, you've got a year and a half or more at this point. And, you know, the contract was only $15 million. So I would say, or I'm sorry, was it $30 million? 15 a year?
I thought it was $30 million, 15 a year.
I know it was 15. No, I didn't believe it was 15 total.
15 total.
15.
What total, are we talking about? 30 million. Like the White Sox are going to give him 30 million
for 2 years after coming, you know, at 31, coming over from, you know, Korea or wherever, Japan. You know, I don't know. It's just that he is on a cheap. It had to be 15 million. Cause I tweeted the other day, By the time the trade deadline comes around, he's going to have less than $11 million left on his contract with about a year and a half left of control. And if he continues to pitch the way that he does, there are a lot of fans out there that say, well, he's got that extra year of control. Like, let's hold on to him. The problem is the White Sox, I don't believe, are going to be competing for any kind of long playoff run next year either. So do you hold on to a guy who is on a really team-friendly contract and is throwing – thanks, Clutch. Appreciate that. It is 2 years for 15. Do you hold on to a guy that who's, you know, maybe not going to be around after next year for what? You know, what are we talking about here? Maybe look, resign Danny, him? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But if he's not going to be around for a long time. He's already 31 going on 32 years old.
Right. If he continues this way at the deadline, you got to flip him. You know,
you have to.
Because then you're thinking about where you're going to extend him.
How long?
Exactly.
A year or two?
So if you decide to sit on it,
bites him in the ass, and it's too late for you to figure it out.
And maybe, you know, maybe they say, well, maybe we can see how this goes throughout the rest of the season, and then we deal with him in the off season. Because again, I don't think the Sox are going to be relevant again next year, based on
I think they'll be a lot more improved than they are this year. But
I guess
going any World Series.
Well, sure. Like relevant is kind of a loose term, depending on what you think of it. You know, I think of, like, if you're relevant, you're like playing for October and beyond. Like you are built to be going to the postseason and beyond. I don't think the Sox are in that situation in 2025. So if someone's going to give you something at the deadline, they're desperate. We need a guy like Fetty because of, you know, the body of work he's put in the first half of the year. And it's a long way to go, man. I mean, he's still... Again, he stepped away from Major League Baseball. It wasn't going well for him. He went to the KBO. Who knows if he's going to be able to continue stuff like this. So these are just hypotheticals at this point. But if he continues this way and someone offers, I think you take that if you can get something that you're going to be able to build around.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, because obviously these teams that are in contention that are looking for that extra push and hoping to go on a deep playoff run are going to be willing to pay for a guy who's got a year and a half of control left. You're going to get a decent return on a guy who's doing what Fetty is doing right now. And I just think it's a no brainer that you've got to go ahead and take that. By the way, we are in the top of the ninth, and yeah, Michael Kopech comes out in a non-safe situation yet again. So
Sox strand in the bottom of the eighth. Surprise, surprise. They stranded. Oh, there goes Kopech just sailing it. The control of Kopech, it's just, you know, I wouldn't
stay on top of that fastball all the time.
No. And just his body language and everything.
His release point is bad.
Yeah.
So he does not have a repeatable release point.
Sox strand, you know, Mendick at second, which again is a whole nother thing. Their situational hitting, something that they were supposed to be working on getting better at. I guess, again, you could talk all you want about it, but if you just don't have the horses to do it, it's mind blowing. So here we are. You're right. Kopech in the ninth. You got a man on first for the Twins, and you know, we'll see. What's the leash on Kopech?
You know, at this point in a tie ball game after sweeping the Rays and losing by one last night, if he can't get an out here in the next batter or two, me personally, if I'm Pedro and I'm Katz, I have somebody up already. You're facing the minimum three. But, you know, again, if he gets out of this inning and you're tied, who do you go with if you get a lead in extras? You know, are you going with Steven Wilson? Are you bringing Brad Keller out after the outing he had yesterday? Where it was, he got through it, but it was a white knuckle ride.
I just think it's always fun when Tim Hill's out there.
The sidearm.
You get a different angle.
Near Submariner to come out there and get a save, huh?
Yeah. This is the game you play when you don't have a consistent kind of, you know, 7, 8, 9, someone to bridge, and then a consistent closer. And you're playing that game of, like, you know, I'm going to pitch to leverage. I'm going to decide on the situation. It's like, well, you know, if you're playing that, then it's tough to repeat that, you know, game after game. And I know it's not always going to be identical, but I don't know. There's something about a guy, I would say, that's coming out of the pen that knows their role. Like, they know exactly where they're going to be put in.
And that's
they know
the moment. Like, nobody has any clue. Like, you go to the bullpen, I get the idea that these guys are professionals, and you sit them down at the beginning of the season and you say, you know what, there's no roles established. Just be ready to pitch any night. That's fine, because you're a professional. You should be able to do that. But there is something to be said about knowing when and where you're going to be. If you're a closer and you know you're the closer and you've been named the closer, any single time there is a lead late in the game, you're already getting amped up in your head for that moment. Now,
Mike, you know, Kopech, and on the I would other say, hand,
he has no idea when he's going to come in. Am I coming in the sixth? Am I coming in the seventh, the eighth, the ninth? I have no idea.
I think there's also, the opposition has it in their mind. Now, you got a lockdown closer, like, you know, when Hendricks was right and everything was going well, that team knew they were almost, it was almost an eight inning game. You know, they had to figure it out, because once you got to Hendricks and he was locked in, or any good closer, you know, that's just having one of those stretches, it shortens the game. Hader, I mean, when Josh Hader was just absolutely lights out, and you just knew it as an opposition. Like, I don't have exactly the entire game. I've got a certain amount of game because I don't want to be down trying to face that guy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, that's a great point, is, you know, you bring up those guys where it feels like it's an eight-inning game. When in 2005, when the Sox went on that run, and they were, you know, first wire to wire, the second half of the season, Bobby Jenks comes up, I think it was in July. You know, they had been using, what's his
Shingo name? To Hermanson to Jenks.
Well, before that, it was Billy? No, it wasn't Billy.
They were using Dustin Hermanson, and Dustin then he Hermanson went down.
Before that.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You were right. I mean, it was like, once Jenks came up and showed you what he could do, he was more of a shutdown closer than I think anybody they used all season that year, and he was fantastic. You know, it was unfortunate how his career ended up being because of, outside
all kinds
issues,
of stuff.
And,
yeah.
Injuries and things off the field. And
Kopech looking to really hand this game to the Twins. Runners at the corner, one out, 1-1 count. He just doesn't look comfortable. The Twins can smell blood right now. I mean, they're on an eight or nine game winning streak. And when you're on that kind of streak and you could sense it, you're starting to have that magic, you know, cause you're on a heater.
Well, that's the thing, you know, we talked about it before Kopech came into the game. When he's got one pitch working, you know, the other ones don't seem to be working. And right now, I mean, he just grooved a fastball right there, and he's lucky he didn't get touched up for it. But the thing is his fastball has not been great tonight. It's been all over the place. And his cutter and his slider seem to be working a lot better. So he can't seem to get his pitches working all at the same time. And that's just a problem. You're not going to be a successful closer.
And how often, pitches working. How often have we said that about Kopech too? He doesn't have it all together. You know, there's always a couple pitches or one pitch that he just can't command, and he's trying to get it all going. And yeah, to your point, that was the danger of bringing him out of the pen. Just kind of a loose cannon.
Yeah. Yeah. Clutch says he's high on the fastball every time. And I'll tell you why. I've been watching it.
Here you go. This should have the Twins on top here.
Ugh, here,
especially with Buxton at third.
That's deep enough.
There you go. I don't want to say
this. Buxton doesn't run all that great anymore these days, but that, you know, even for him, that's
just
deep
fine.
Enough. But him getting high on his fastball, his fastball's been riding high a lot since the start of the season this year. And the thing is his release point is not the same on the fastball. I've been watching it.
Well,
all
could
season.
That be overthrowing, Danny? I mean, I know when maybe. I sometimes tried to kick it up a couple notches, which Kopech clearly is, because he knows he's in that sprint mode, that ball would fly out of the zone high, you know. And I was were you a lefty? I was a right-handed pitcher. And,
I am a lefty.
Okay.
With
so I
control problems. So
I would, you know, I knew, and my pitching coach knew, and my catcher knew, when I was trying to get a couple extra miles per hour, and, you know, you absolutely overthrow, and it's usually going to be high out of the zone.
Yeah. He, so his thing is see, now he's in the last two pitches I watched him, he actually stayed on top of it. He's following through. And you see, you'll notice he bends his back and follows through, and that ball goes in where he wants it. There are other times where he looks like he's just amped up. He's putting too much on himself. He's trying to get the out so badly, so hard, that he doesn't bend. He almost pulls the arm back, and the body doesn't follow. It's almost like throwing a dart. He's got that snapping motion.
That aiming.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like, you're not trusting your mechanics, the motion, just the – I mean, it's repeatable. Like, that's the whole thing. It's just, how can you have a repeatable motion? Even when you're throwing different pitches, it's a repeatable motion. It looks the same. And I think there's a frustration. He knows his bread and butter can be his fastball. It's a dangerous pitch. Tries to rear back. And then you're getting out of your mechanics. Then you're out of yourself, so to speak. And that's where you talk about not bending and all these other things, and your release point then is affected.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but you know, these guys have been kind of, they're pushing. They're really, they know, you know, Ozzy said it the other day, they're professionals, and that, let's not be mistaken about that. Good, bad, or other, they are professionals. These are guys that have been successful their whole lives before making it up to the MLB, and whether or not that's the case once they're at the MLB, they're not used to losing. They're not used to struggling. Well, the press when it happens is it's a real thing, right? And you've done it. I've done it. Anybody who's played at any level has done it at some point. You know, you get into a struggle, a slump, whatever it is, you press a little bit. And I think a lot of their issues right now is mental. They just need to learn how to kind of focus, let whatever happened be gone, and move on to the what's in front of you. And a lot of these guys, I just think their confidence isn't quite there. And we bash them, you know, whatever. I don't like to bash them because these guys are really good ball players anywhere else. You know, they're just struggling right now in a bad situation on a bad team. So you cannot be as bad as they are. Well, there it is. It just popped up in the chat. It's 100% mental to be this bad. These guys as professionals cannot be this bad just because they're bad. There's something going on in their heads, and they need
self-fulfilling prophecy is, I think, what you're kind of getting at. And when you start the way they started, and you know, you have the sweep of the Rays, which is going to happen. You know, bad teams are going to win 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row sometimes. It's going to happen. And you know, but when you look at still the metrics, you look at the numbers, the game within the game, all that kind of stuff, you're like, you know, offensively and defensively, this team is just scuffling so bad. It's going to kind of even out in a negative way, if that makes sense. Like, they're going to come back down to earth after that sweep. And, you know, we even saw a couple defensive miscues in this game. You know, Lopez kind of getting a little out of sorts at second base. And you could you absolutely can press defensively. You know, you could squeeze. I mean, you can, you know, you could be so tightly wound that when a ball comes to you, you are thinking about a half a dozen other things besides the most simplest thing, which is make the play in front of you.
Well, you know, I mean, when you press, and it's in every aspect of the game. You know, we talk about the IQ. All right.
We could have a Southside stand up here.
You know, I may have to unmute for that moment. And if you guys hear something in the background, because we do want to actually talk about John a little bit.
John Schriffen got the game. Well, we can wait till after the game, and I can say my thing about Schriffen, and we could talk about that a little bit. And I know I'm sure I'll get pushback and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I've got some thoughts. I shared some with Trey. Trey and I had a little back and forth on social media, on Twitter X. It's tough to have conversations on Twitter or anywhere. I don't know if you knew that, Danny, with social media. It's very difficult.
You know, I may have been privy to some conversations that have been less than desirable to have, but, you know, it is what it is. the lack of characters that Twitter, you know, the caps that they put on characters on Twitter is always tough too. It's hard to get a point across.
Was this a double play? I'm trying to listen to you.
Aloy beat it. Aloy beat it out. At least the call was safe. I don't know if they're looking at it or not. Because again,
Gavin Sheets could be your hero here. I mean, that's why he's, you know, this is a tailor made spot for him.
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing too. So if we're going to talk about John a little bit later, but I keep hearing, you know, he said it a couple of times this season already about Gavin Sheets' power. He's a big, powerful man. But the reason Sheets is having success this year is because he stopped pushing for the power. He was selling out for the power. Ian and I talked about it ad nauseum.
Danny, and you better daily. Credit.
He's a bat-to-ball guy.
You need to credit the legend, Jim Thome. Jim Thome got his hands on this young man and molded him into what he is right now.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Anybody that watched this kid come up in the minors knows his hand-eye coordination, putting the bat on the ball and hitting it square, is something that he has done throughout. When the White Sox decided we need to hit more dingers and we got a short porch in right field and, you know, the ball's supposed to fly out of this park, let's get Gavin Sheets, who's big as a Mack truck, out there to do that. Well, that's where he kind of lost some of his bat to ball. And we saw that the last couple of seasons with him and some up and downs at the plate.
Do you want him out in right field still just so we can get that bat in the lineup?
Oh, I have some thoughts on this. You know, I would not mind optioning Andrew Vaughn and giving the first base job to Gavin Sheets right now.
Wow.
I prefer not to see him out in right field, although he has improved.
You want to do slightly. Him? You want to do him a Jose Abreu? You just want to option Andrew Vaughn, huh?
Well, you know, Jose Abreu is like 47 years old. Like, Andrew Vaughn's only his fourth season. You know what I mean? You know, I'm just throwing it out there. Don't get me wrong. Love Jose Abreu. He was a bright spot on some bad teams here on the south side as well. So, and that looks like.
Oh, no. Sheets beat it out. The wheels, not just the muscle, but the wheels. Kind of a difficult turn here. Not the cleanest turn you're going to find. Correa with a strong throw, but Sheets with those wheels. Sox live here. Bottom of nine, man on first, two outs. And here's your guy, the guy that you want to option. I hope he walks it off right now just to prove you wrong,
Dan. I mean, listen, he's been hitting the ball a little bit better lately, but I haven't looked at his BABIP. I mean, and I feel like maybe he's getting BABIP'd a little bit, but at the same
he's had some tough luck. He's had a little bit of tough luck.
Well, they've been talking about his leg in his swing a little bit and how he's taken a smaller step in leg kick. And, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But you know what I noticed him and Benintendi had been doing early in the season that I'm seeing less of right now? They were both stepping in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them stepping in the bucket. And if you guys don't know what I mean by stepping in the bucket, they're instead of stepping in the pitches, that front foot was going towards their backside.
Yeah.
And you leave the bat out over the plate where you can't cover. Son of a gun. So my feed must be behind. I just got a X notification. I will let it play out here.
All right. You're telling me this is not a walk-off? It's not an Andrew Vaughn walk-off? Wow. He expanded the zone on that one.
Ian explains the guy stepping in the bucket pretty well in the chat here. That front shoulder opens up, and then you whiff on that outside pitch. You can't cover the outside half of the plate. Both of them were doing it a lot earlier in the season. So I see less of it from both of them, although I do still see it on occasion. I saw it on a swing earlier tonight from Andrew. And then the very next swing, it seemed like he corrected it. So, again, maybe these are things they're working on. They just haven't figured out yet. But Andrew has been squaring up some more balls. He hasn't found the power stroke yet. But seems to be hitting it fairly hard. Unfortunately, straight at guys a lot of times. So that's my only case for, you know, that I could make for maybe sending him down. Give him some time to work on whatever it is he's working on to be more consistent with that and that swing and his approach and be able to get that high lift on the leg kick that he used to have where he was generating more power instead of, selling out just to make some soft contact, even though sometimes he hits it hard.
Well,
But working on that kind of thing in the major league level right now, when you're struggling as bad as you are, sure. might not be doing him any favors either.
Yeah, but then you say, would that rip the confidence, you know, or do you say, you know what,
he can handle it. Send him down to Charlotte and he starts crushing the ball, that might do wonders for his confidence, especially in that ball.
We've seen guys crush the ball in Charlotte and then come up and then it's just, you know, nothing. But are you saying the ballpark factor
might have something to do with that, but you know, it also might have something to do with the coaching staff here on the south side. A lot of it's just mental, like we've been talking about, you know what I mean?
Well,
the fact of the matter is they need to clean up some of those the hitches in their swings.
I think I've got a quote here from Marcus Thames. This is our hitting coach, and this is what he said this past week. As a whole, a lot of our guys are putting a little bit more pressure on themselves and kind of going out of the zone. And we just saw that with Vaughn. It goes back to the basics. Since you were a kid, get a good pitch in the zone and hit it hard. Once we can simplify like that, good things will happen. They have a track record. I don't know exactly who he's talking about, but you look up at the scoreboard and you have 60 or so at bats and you see a 160, a 170, and it stinks. But guess what? Hopefully you get a 400 or 500 more and you could turn it around and right the ship. So talk about really simplifying it there. All you got to do is just see the ball, hit the ball.
I mean, if it were that easy, we'd all be up there making millions of dollars, right? It's not, unfortunately. And I see Trey says he doesn't buy demoting him will help his confidence. It seems like he'll kill any confidence that he had left. And you know what? At this point, he said it's been four seasons. This guy was drafted, you know, fourth over. The guys that went in front of him in the draft are absolutely killing. Adley Rutschman is, you know, doing what Adley Rutschman was supposed to do. Bobby Witt Jr. doing what Bobby Witt Jr. was supposed to do. Everybody was high on Andrew Vaughn. Andrew Vaughn, it wasn't just the White Sox. Andrew Vaughn was talked about by everybody as being the most MLB-ready hitter in that draft class. And he has not performed.
And that's not the first time it's happened over the last, what, 6-7 years.
But he's going backwards. Last year we saw him take a step. We thought, okay, well, he's finally playing first base every day. And he did. He took a step. Now, you know, his home runs went up by a handful. I think he had 17 in 22 and then 23 and 21. But his average and some other things in his game suffered, you know. And now he's 26 years old, the year that most MLB stars peak is when you're starting to see that really big jump. Andrew Vaughn went backwards.
Yeah.
And he's not a great defensive player. So if
this is the guy they wanted to build, what are we doing? Too, you know, they weren't going to pay Abreu the money, but you know, there were a lot of trade conversations happening a year or so ago around the Sox trying to acquire some pitching. And we had these discussions as Sox fans about who was untouchable. You know, and it really felt like Andrew Vaughn was untouchable. They absolutely wanted to keep this guy. You're not going to pry him away from the White Sox. They wanted to build around him. They thought he was going to be a pillar. It looks bleak right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all about giving the guy a chance, which is why I say send him down. But if he doesn't, if that kills his confidence, oh, well. Like Gavin, she's neither one of them are defensive dynamos.
And right? The Sox have six wins.
If one of them's hitting, you give that guy the opportunity.
If you're going to try to figure something out, this is the year to figure it out. I mean, there are zero expectations, absolutely zero. And if Vaughn needs to go down for a little while and it helps him in the future, he sticks around with the White Sox and he could talk about his time in 2024 that he was able to actually get some minor league experience, which he really didn't get much of, you know, to start off his career. The pandemic played a role in that, I believe. And maybe he's saying, you know what, I needed that. And things unlock and the rest of 2024 or maybe 2025, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the chat. I'm not laughing at you, buddy. The Wes Ian... Oh my God, the sausage. I don't even want to spend another second on the sausage. I just find that hilarious. Like, how do you even come up with that? How are you walking around with a freaking summer sausage, a giant fucking summer sausage, pardon my French, in your bag, in the clubhouse and in the dugout, and just decide to pull it out one day?
We're talking about food right now, right?
You were talking about the twin celebration sausage.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, you know, it's Minnesota, man. They do things a little different.
But this came out of a player's, like, he's walking around with his bag. And one day he just decides to toss it to the guy who just crossed home plate as he's making his way to the dugout. Dude, and it's stuck.
You've been on teams, man, for a lot of your life. So have I. There's just weird little quirky things that people do, you know, that it sticks and things are going in the right direction. And, you know, people, you know, and then you like laugh at it because this is so dumb. This is so stupid. It kind of almost takes the pressure off the game. And you're just like little kids playing. And look at what's going on. Was it 9 in a row now for the Twins?
It is 9 in a row for the Twins. They're having fun. They are doing pretty much all the small things that they need to do. And it seems like they figured some things out since early in the season. But, you know, I guess playing the White Sox 6 times in the span of a month would do that for the confidence of a team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pedro's obsessed. He's going to get this thing, back on the right track. He might sleep at the ballpark tonight, pour over everything. You know, the guys are working hard. Everybody's working hard. You know, he's a man on fire, man. He's going to get this thing going. But before we, you know, have to say goodbye in a little bit, I do want to hear your stuff on Schifrin.
We should talk about this.
Was a big fan thing, and you know, I just think he's got, it's almost lose-lose for him. You know, this is a gig he's wanted for a long, long time, a play-by-play guy for a Major League Baseball team. This is his first gig, you know, at the beginning of the season, man, boots on the ground. He's out in the parking lots, opening day, trying to meet the fans, get to know the fans, try to just immerse himself in what goes on the South Side, especially on a day that's so special like opening day. Knows that he's got big shoes to fill. He's got Steve Stone with him. It is a ridiculously miserable and tough season. You know, I just don't see him trying to go after people. And I think some of his stuff was kind of taken out of context. I just can't see him thinking, well, I try to get into everybody's good graces. And that's what I spent a majority of spring training at the beginning of the season. And now I'm just going to pick fights and I'm going to go after people. Look, this guy is just trying to find his footing. Some of the stuff that he's saying and doing right now, it's probably not going to stick around. He's going to evolve as a play-by-play guy. I just don't have any more hate and anger to put towards John Schifrin. You know, it's been displaced on ownership and how they have, you know, treated fans and all this kind of stuff. I just don't have any more anger in me to go after Schifrin. I have no reason to, you know, and the hater stuff, I don't think he's talking about Sox fans. I think he's talking about, you know, fans from around the league that are giving White Sox fans and the White Sox just a bunch of shit, because why would you even want to get excited about anything? You have nothing to get excited about. You suck. Your organization sucks. And it was an exciting weekend. Saturday specifically was an exciting game. And I think he got caught up in the moment. He's like, everybody around the league that's dunking on the Sox, I get it, but we have a moment of fun right now. Right now, at this moment, it is fun. And boy, he just got taken to the woodshed.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing, and I was at that game Saturday, by the way. Unfortunately, was not there for the Benintendi walk-off. We had made our way out at that point. But the energy at the ballpark was awesome. I would almost say it was more electric than the home opener this year. The weather was fantastic.
Yeah, it was summer, the giveaway, everybody's, you know,
they
had
the
time.
Whiskey queue crawl, sure. That, you know, they opened up the gates like 4 hours before game time for anybody that had tickets to this thing. People were drinking, people were eating. There were all kinds of extra giveaways on top of the jersey. Like, just a really great day to be out at the ballpark. And, you know, for John Schriffen to have a moment where Benintendi, who not only hit his first, but his second home run of the season in the same game, both in clutch moments that you needed it. The Sox had won four games at that point, four games over the course of the season. And that is the most exciting thing they have done all season long. It wasn't a milkshake. It was a walk-off dinger in extras. The guy's got one of the toughest jobs in baseball right now to be the color guy for a really bad team that's hard to watch most of the time. So he's got to do something to bring some energy to his calls. You know, White Sox fans are acting like, oh, well, that just seems forced and ungenuine, disingenuous, and all these things I see, and I'm going, well, what do you expect from him? At that point, it was a fifth win of the season. Give the guy a break. He's got to do his job day in and day out, and he's got to keep some kind of energy up. Otherwise, he's not going to keep that job for very long. And White Sox fans, if he didn't have any energy, would be like, this guy sucks.
He's terrible. That's why I said he's get him out of here. He's in a lose-lose spot. And to Trey, you know, Trey, I thought our back and forth was just fine, man. So I wouldn't worry about anything. You know, it's tough to have civil conversations, you know, because it's tough to read sarcasm and all this kind of stuff. And you're kind of just like throwing things at people. And sometimes people don't stick around for a real back and forth conversation. And I also think people dig their heels into certain, you know, mindsets, and they're not going to budge from a viewpoint. And
right.
with the Schriffen stuff, I do feel like there's so much anger. There is so much, and rightfully so, there's so much anger from Sox fans because of what has transpired over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. In this season specifically, in the offseason, where are we going and what's the future and where's our team going to be playing and what stadium is it going to be in and all this stuff that it finds its way on a guy that, I'm sorry, just does not deserve it in my mind.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I see in the chat, Clutch asks, he says he doesn't have Twitter. What exactly were people mad about? He had too much energy, question mark. And it's not so much that he had too much energy. It's what he said. And kind of, yeah, maybe having too much energy a little bit. It's the whole Southside stand up thing. Every time somebody hits a home run or the White Sox win, you know, he says that Southside stand up with a lot.
Well,
of energy.
It was like, wasn't it to all the haters? And I think people took it as like, oh, there are Sox fans that are hating on their own team. They want their team to lose. And I don't know. I don't think he was saying that. I really don't.
He wasn't.
At least I want to assume it wasn't like that.
I don't think he was at all. And maybe he was saying to some of, because there are, I mean, if you go on social media, there are people out there saying, I hope they lose every single game from here on out, as if it solidifies something about, you know, oh, it's going to force the,
well, I want Pedro Grifol to be fired. So I don't know what that, how that's going
to
work.
If they ripped off 10 in a row, Pedro Grifol needs to be fired anyway. And any GM worth his salt, not saying that, man, we don't know the jury's still out on Chris Getz, but any GM worth his salt is going to see that this guy makes a lot of bad in-game decisions and probably doesn't deserve to be the manager of a contender when that time comes. But, you know, who knows how long it takes before Pedro gets fired. But going out and losing every game the rest of the season, being historically bad, that's the one thing. Oh, I really hope they are historically bad. That's something to look forward to, making history. No, it's not. I don't care. I think that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard come from White Sox fans. I'm sorry if you're one of them. I'm not trying to dunk on you, but I just want you to think about what you're saying for a minute. You want the White Sox to go down in history as the worst team to ever play a single season of baseball.
Well, I think
you realize how stupid that sounds.
I can't get into people's mindset, but I think there is a thought there that if they do, that will, you know, hang on Reinsdorf. Like, that will be next to his legacy, next to Getz, next to Pedro. And it'll, like, send a message to Jerry and the ownership group. And I truly believe they will not receive that message.
No,
they might hear it, but they won't listen. You know, like,
I mean, we're in 43 years of ineptitude from this organization. You think now all of a sudden it's going to hit the ears? And something's going to crack? No.
Yeah.
So the Sox have been dunked on since Jerry Reinsdorf took over the organization. People have been chewing them up and spitting them out. This is not something that's going to change. It's the same thing as the attendance conversation. There have been some bad attendance seasons. And yeah, you know what? Usually when there's a good attendance season and the payroll goes up, and when there's a bad attendance season, the payroll goes down. But, you know, the problem is there hasn't been any real success between any of those seasons. So it doesn't really matter. None of it is going to make a difference.
Do what you want to do as Sox fans. I mean, you know, I'll get up to my hand
fired up.
I know. I kind of knew. I'm starting. I know where to push the buttons. I'll go out to my handful of games this season. And, you know, obviously people showed up 29,000 on Saturday, the giveaway and a lot of other stuff in the summer weather. And in a season that's going to be extremely rough, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, enjoy yourself or don't. But, you know, if you want to enjoy yourself, that's fine. You know, whatever that is for you, you know, go out, have a good time. Go see the Sox. If it's not, and staying away from them is the enjoyment, that's great. But I think Schifrin is trying to manifest some sort of excitement. And again, it's his first gig, you know, and I'm sure he is aware of what has happened in previous spots, you know, other personalities that have been before him and how difficult things are. I think it's tough for him to like be cognizant of all the pain that Sox fans feel. Like if I could take all my pain and Danny, you could take your pain, somehow we could implant it into his brain, he might behave a little differently. I don't know, you know, but he's trying to create something from really nothing. The Sox are giving him nothing. You know, there's just no fuel. He has to do it all on his own for the most part. And look, whatever kind of Schifrin we get right now, I just don't think it's going to be like that towards the end of the season and beyond. He's just absolutely trying it out. And what a season to try it out, because we'll forget about this year pretty quickly.
I hope so. you know, that's just it. He's got a difficult job. Why are we busting on this guy trying to do whatever he can with the difficult job? Like, leave him alone. His calls during the game are fairly decent. You know, he's for lack of better words, he's dick riding the White Sox, but he's trying to inject something into this fan base. You know, there are times when, you know,
if he was doing the opposite, he wouldn't have his job very long.
Oh, he's talking up these players like, yo, you know, Gavin Sheets is this prolific power guy, and Andrew Vaughn is going through his struggles, but he had hit 21 dingers last year. You know, whatever it is that he's talking about, single individual accolades, sometimes I'm like, please stop. But I get that he's got a job to do. You're the color guy. You are the hype man. And there's not much to be hype about, if nothing, in most cases. So yeah. Give the guy a break.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about this weekend series at all a little bit before we sign out? I know we're going a little bit over our typical hour.
Well, I think we saw a rumor that could the Sox be facing Lance Lynn? Is that on the docket? Is Lance Lynn one of the guys? Because that'd be interesting. That'd be interesting to watch. I know St. Louis is, I think, scuffling a little bit here. They're not the normal Cardinals. I've not been to that stadium. I was at the old Busch Stadium, but I have a feeling there'll be some Sox fans that make the trip. I was thinking about it way back when, and then I just said, you know what? I better not. It's probably best if I don't make that trek.
Well, it depends on when you're going to Busch Stadium, because everybody knows you don't go to Busch Stadium in July and August.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the hottest stadium in baseball. Somehow it's not in the you know, a tropical climate, but it is the hottest stadium in baseball in the summertime.
I predicted with Pat that they would get swept. You know, the Sox would get swept by the Cardinals. You know, Cardinals would kind of try to, you know, when the Sox come to town against teams, I think they try to look as like, that's a slump buster. You know, I'm just going to absolutely dunk on these guys, and we're going to get our season going here. And depending on what happens at the rest of this series here tomorrow, you know, Sox are going to be just crawling into St. Louis, and it could be a mental thing. You know, there's going to be few bright spots.
There might be, there might not be. We might get more of the same. You know, it just depends on, you know, who shows up. Is the Tommy Pham effect real? They have been playing better baseball. They have been scoring some runs. Unfortunately, the one run ball game curse is still, you know, biting at us here. But you got to think that, again, these guys aren't going to all hit under 200 or just above 200 for the entire season. So there are going to be some times when the Sox come out and rip off three wins like they did.
There will be times this year where they might win, you know, seven in a row, you know, somewhere in the heart of the summer.
It's a lot of fun to watch them win. I mean, this is past weekend when they swept the Rays.
Do you know what it's a lot of fun to see guys that could have an impact, you know, beyond this year. When Nastrini and Cannon had some pretty good outings back to back, what was it, a week and a half ago or something? I don't even know if the Sox won those games per se, but that just those individual performances.
It gives you hope for what's to come in the future, right? It gives you some. Well, I mean, I guess hope is really the only word I have.
Yeah, I'm looking
that hope that maybe next season after they have some polishing and they get a year of major league time under their belt, even though they've both been sent back down at this point, they will be back up at some point. Yeah. You know, it gives you, especially with the Sox. Again, I hate to beat up on the same thing over and over again, but we all know the Sox aren't going to spend a ton of money on a pitching rotation. They're not going to give guys 5, 6, 7 year deals and, you know, 150, 180, 200 plus million dollars. So you got to hope that some of these young guys hit, and there's a lot of young talent that's going to be coming up through the
season. Yeah, I would say definitely, you know, signing off here, I would say you'd be ready for that. Just be ready to see some more young talent filter in, and that's where there's hope. And that's where, you know, I think Getz kind of started talking about that finally is the foundation, you know, the grand.
Well, he finally used the word rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, it's looking at everything as a whole. I mean, you got to go beyond just this team, this Major League Baseball team. You've got to go down to the farm and see what's coming in the pipeline. So that's where we're at. We'll, you know, hopefully try to do better next time. I wish we could have pulled a win out. I mean, our streak is, you know, we're on a losing streak, Danny. We gotta pick it back up.
He has a couple here. Tuesdays in a row. Although the games have been at least good. They've been entertaining right up until the end. You know,
both of them, the Sox lost the lead late though.
Right. And that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tougher to lose by that one run at the end of the game than it is to be blown out. But in this situation and in this season, I feel like in this first 6, 7 innings is something that will. Oh, I'm getting messages here due to limited bandwidth. Significant reduction.
Oh, we should probably sign off then.
Yeah. So anyway. Like I was saying, you know, just having those one run games and showing some competitiveness throughout the game is probably better for me this year. I just want to see them continue to fight. And then, you know, we'll move on to next year when the time comes.
It means a lot that so many of you decided to spend this Tuesday night with us. Really appreciate all the comments. And, you know, you help fuel this Hot Takes and Heaters as you always do on Tuesday nights. Subscribe. Like this Future Sox YouTube channel. We appreciate you passing it along to other Sox fans. FutureSox.net, all the great content that's going on in the system, like we talked about. And, you know, we, of course, cover the Major League team, but there is so many wonderful things written and podcast-wise on the grand scheme of things, as kind of Getz was alluding to. He's Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS. I am Nick Morawski at Nick_GGTB and the old Twitter X. Hey, until next time, go Sox.